Hello and welcome to the Bookshelf Odyssey podcast. My name is Art, and today I have a very special guest. In honor of Victober, I have Katie Lumsden, who is the author of, that book back there, you can see. It's The Secrets of Hartwood Hall, and a book that was just published this year. It is a historical fiction written as a love letter to Victorian literature. We'll find out all about the book, The Mysteries of Hartwood Hall, and so much more. This is the beginning of a new season. I'm starting a new mini-series podcast that might actually end up being a longer one, but I'm calling it Distracted by Dickens, and in it I'll just read a Dickens short story, or if it's ongoing, I might actually dip into some of his novels. But I want to just talk about Dickens, some of his short stories and works that he wrote, as well as some of his contemporaries. I know familiar names will be popping up if this goes to be a long, ongoing series. You know, writers like Elizabeth Gaskell, the Brontes, Anthony Trollope, you know, so many more that just wrote wonderful, wonderful stories. And I hope to give you a weekly or monthly distraction with some great stories that come from the Victorian period. One of my personal favorite time periods, especially for literature. And that's what we're gonna be talking about today, is the Victorian literature that that we love so much. Now, for those who don't know, I mentioned Victober. That's Victorian October, where we on the BookTube community will read Victorian literature. It's very simple. You just have to read one piece of Victorian literature and you have participated. But there are reading challenges, there are reading prompts, some great video content online, and I'll link to my channel in the show notes if you want to check out my YouTube page, where I'll be posting some things there. I know some of the videos I have coming up, I'm going to be talking about Elizabeth Gaskell's letters. I'm going to be offering some hints. If you want to start reading Victorian literature, I want to share with you some things that have helped me in reading Victorian literature. I did not come easily into Victorian literature. I found it, when I first was reading it, very difficult. But I felt challenged by it, and I enjoyed what I could understand, and I just kept at it and have really made some progress in that. So I don't come to you as an expert. I come to you as an enthusiast for the works of Charles Dickens and many, many others who wrote during the Victorian age. So with the commercials out of the way, let's go ahead and dive into my interview with Katie Lumsden. Welcome back to the Bookshelf Odyssey. Today we will be exploring one of my favorite sections of my library, Victorian literature. So today I invited on the show a Victorian enthusiast, Katie Lumsden. And according to her bio, Katie read Jane Eyre at the age of 13 and never looked back. She spent her teenage years devouring 19th century literature, reading every Dickens, Bronte, Gaskell, Austen, and Hardy novel she could find. She has a degree in English literature and history from the University of Durham and a Master of Arts in Creative Writing. She also has a wonderful YouTube channel called Books and Things with currently over 27,000 subscribers. But the most significant of all, she's my guest today. So Katie, welcome to the Bookshelf Odyssey.
Hi, very nice to be here.
Yeah, I've been really excited to have you on. I mentioned to a couple of other BookTubers I chat with that you were going to be a guest. So we've got people excited about this. The question I like to ask my guests, first of all, is what have you been reading lately? And is there anything you could recommend for us?
So currently I'm reading The Betrothed, which is an Italian early 19th century classic, which is very long. So I've been reading it on and off for like 2 months, 2 or 3 months, along with other things. So I'm trying not to pick up any other books and just focus on finishing The Betrothed at the moment. So that's my current main read. And then I usually have an audiobook and a physical book on the go at the same time. So The Betrothed is my physical read. And then I'm listening on audiobook to Man and Wife by Wilkie Collins, who is an author I sometimes really love and sometimes don't get on with. So I'm only a few chapters into Man and Wife, but I've heard very good things about it so far. And it seems good so far. So I'm enjoying that.
Yeah, I'll be reading Man and Wife for October or Victober, which we'll talk about Victober here in a little bit. But Kate Howe's Patreon reading group is reading that this for Victober. So I'm looking forward to getting into it. I've only read a couple of Collins's works, so I'm excited to be exploring more of his writing.
Yeah, I'm excited to read on with Man and Wife because I know Kate has said that it's a really strong one. And Wilkie Collins is a little bit of variable for me, but I'm enjoying it.
Well, I was I'm I've got several books I'm reading at the same time as well. One I thought I'd mention that might be of interest to you. I'm familiar with your YouTube channel. I think yours is one of the first BookTube channels I've found. I was just looking around one day for I'm like, surely somebody's talking about Charles Dickens on YouTube, I was just interested to learn more, and thanks to the YouTube algorithm, your channel popped up right at the top, and then so I've fallen into the happy world of BookTube and haven't really looked back. But one of the books I'm reading, it's called Mothers of the Novel, 100 Good Women Writers Before Jane Austen. And it's written by Dale Spender, and she had this book published in, it was in the mid 80s, I think. So some of it is maybe a little bit of out of date information, but I found that interesting to see how, how much I guess suppression has happened in literature, and even from comparing the 1980s and what she was seeing versus what's happening now. She was talking about, like, many people think of one of the first English written novels to be something like, Robinson Crusoe by Daniel Defoe. As you said, which is kind of would probably come to a surprise to authors like Aphra Behn, who was writing novels in the 1600s. And anyway, she's exploring how, there were so many women writers even before, the ones we think of as being the founding novel writers. I'm kind of in the middle of it right now, but she's exploring, like, what could have happened or why were their stories suppressed and things like that. So I've found it to be a very interesting read.
Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. It's always interesting to look at like what figures from literary history get remembered and what ones get forgotten, which I find very interesting for Victorian literature as well, because there are a lot of very successful Victorian novelists who were, hugely popular, hugely beloved in the 19th century that now we don't read, whereas there are others that we do still read a lot. And it's really interesting to kind of see who survived and who didn't and why that might have been.
When I first really started getting into reading Victorian literature, which was really around the time I found BookTube, I'm so grateful for your channel and others that have expanded my reading, because if you would have asked me like 20 years ago to name Victorian writers, I would have said Charles Dickens and Jane Austen, which she's not even Victorian. And now, I've found like Elizabeth Gaskell and Mary Elizabeth Braddon and so many others. Now I can't even think of them all, but anyway, the book is really interesting. So as I said, today we're going to talk about Victorian literature, and I think I would describe you, Katie, and myself as well as Victorian enthusiasts. I don't know if I'd consider at least myself an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I love reading the literature of that time. But what's your history with it? In your bio, it said you read Jane Eyre as your first entrance into that. You want to kind of just walk us through how you found and became such a fan?
Yeah, so I read Jane Eyre when I was 13 because there was a television adaptation on, at the time, a television adaptation with Ruth Wilson and Toby Stevenson. And my parents like reading, and my parents like classics, and my mum really loves Jane Eyre. So I, being 13, watched the first episode of the miniseries with my parents, and I really enjoyed it. So my mum said, oh, why don't you read Jane Eyre? And she gave me a copy of Jane Eyre, and I read it all. I think maybe before the second episode, or I read the whole book before the miniseries had finished. And I just really, really loved it. And after that, I wanted to get more into classics. So I read a lot of 19th century literature, a lot of which was through recommendations from my mum, but also through television adaptations, because in the 90s and the 2000s, there were so many amazing adaptations, screen adaptations of 19th century books. So a lot of the time I would watch an adaptation first and then I'd read the book, which made a lot of classics more approachable and accessible for me as a teenager. And then soon I was really enjoying them and really enjoying what I was reading. And I stopped, you know, watching adaptations first and started delving into sort of more obscure Victorian literature. And I just really, really enjoyed it. And as a teenager, I read very, very few modern books. I read very few YA books. I mostly just read 19th century literature. Like I'd read all of Dickens by the time I was 18, which now I look back on it, it feels very odd. Like I feel like now a long book slightly daunts me. And when I was like 15, I was like, no, 1,000 pages, excellent. You know, that was just what I liked to read. So, you know, I read a lot of 19th century literature as a teenager. And it wasn't really till university that I got into contemporary literature as well. And now I read a big mix of everything. But it's still the Victorians who are my first literary love, and the books that I find really, really interesting. And I also feel like, because I like the Victorian period and its literature, because the history is really interesting, but also because if you read a lot from one time period, you start to have a context that is really helpful and can make your appreciation for other books from that time period greater. So in a way, it's a bit of a snowball where, because I've read a lot of Victorian literature, I get even more out of Victorian literature, which is one of the reasons, I guess, why I keep coming back to it.
Yeah. That context thing was very helpful to me. I first tried reading Dickens. I was probably 14 or so. And I'd actually, you know, kind of aware of who he is, you know, Christmas Carol, that kind of thing. And so I tried reading Great Expectations because I had heard or saw a trailer for some miniseries that had come out. I think Anthony Hopkins was in it. And I thought, wow, that looks amazing. I had no idea that these old books could be look so cool. So I tried reading it. I made it, you know, 7 or 8 chapters in. I mean, this is unlike anything I'd ever read before. And finally I thought, you know, I really like this, but this is hard. I don't know what's going on. I'm missing something. And, you know, I now would look back. I think I was, just hadn't grown as a reader, and I was missing a lot of the historical context too, as to what was happening. But I kept at it. A few years later, I started watching, some like movie versions and things of like Jane Austen adaptations, and realizing, okay, you know, that there's something in these stories that aren't just, you know, old stuffy novels. You know, there's actually really deep things they're exploring, and began to build some context and then developing as a reader as well. You can end up handling some of those harder texts now.
Yeah.
But then your love of Victorian literature led to, you know, starting a YouTube channel, and eventually now you have just published your first book, The Secrets of, whoops, it's blurred, The Secrets of Hartwood Hall. Tell us about that. How did you become a writer?
So having said I've loved the Victorian literature since I was 13, I have loved writing even longer. So I've been writing stories and trying to write novels for a very, very long time, probably since I was, like 11, 12. I think I first finished a novel when I was 12, but it was very, very, very bad. But I've been writing on and off for a lot of years, and I really, really love writing. I think just because I love books and I love reading, and I always have, and the same things that make me love reading make me want to write. So I worked on lots of projects over a number of years, and kind of didn't have any luck getting published. And then finally I wrote The Secrets of Harwood Hall, which is set in the Victorian period, and managed to get a book deal, which is very exciting. So The Secrets of Harwood Hall came out earlier this year, and it is heavily inspired by lots of Victorian books. So it's set in 1852, and it's about a governess called Margaret Lennox who takes up a new position at a slightly mysterious house called Harwood Hall, where things are not quite what they seem. But Margaret herself has, things that she's not telling anyone. She's a widow, and she kind of has her own complicated background that she brings to this place of Harwood Hall, and things kind of go on from there. So definitely lots of Bronte vibes, but I feel like in a way it's been a, yeah, inspired by an awful lot of different Victorian books that I've read over a really long period of time, I suppose, and by my like love of Victorian history in general, I guess.
As I mentioned, I'll be starting this book in October. It just feels like it's going to be a good October vibe to it. From the sound of it, what I love about at least from what I've read and have heard some non-spoiler reviews is it's like a love letter to Victorian literature, which I'm on all on board for.
Yeah, I think there's definitely lots of references and like nods to Victorian literature that you would recognize as someone who likes Victorian literature. But also I wanted to do something slightly different because I read a lot of historical fiction as well, and I read a lot of historical fiction, published today set in the Victorian period, which I always find really fun. And there's a lot of fantastic books written today set in the past. But I always think if I read a book or if I write a book set in the Victorian period, I don't want it to be something that could have been written in the Victorian period, because otherwise I could just go and read a book that was actually written in the Victorian period. So I guess hopefully The Secrets of Harwood Hall is like a blend of very Victorian stuff that will be familiar to people who love Victorian literature, but also with some other different things going on as well, because I wouldn't want to write a book that would have been written in the Victorian period, I suppose, because you could just go and read a book by an actual Victorian, I guess, instead.
And then, if I remember right, you said you've got another one you're working on right now that or is going to be published next year.
Yes, so that's The Trouble with Mrs. Montgomery Hearst. So that is coming out in the UK next year in July. But I don't have a US publisher for that yet. So when it's coming out in another place in the world, I don't know. But at least in the UK, and it will probably be, probably there'll be ways to get it somewhere. It will be coming out. So I basically just finished like the edits for that. So that's exciting. Yeah, The Trouble with Mrs. Montgomery Hearst is also set in the Victorian period, but quite different in tone, in that it's not gothic, and much more sort of like Elizabeth Gaskell, Anthony Trollope, Jane Austen, comedy of manners feel, I hope. So that's been really fun to write as well.
What has surprised you the most about being a writer? Because I know you used to do like editing and stuff, and so now you're kind of on the opposite side.
Yeah, so I also work as an editor. I used to be an in-house editor, and now I'm a freelance editor. So I work for publishers, editing other people's books, sometimes sort of early structural edits and sometimes copy editing and proofreading, the kind of later stages. So I find it quite weird because I sort of done the journey from both sides. I don't know that there's been much that has been surprising in terms of sort of becoming a published author. A lot of it is I have seen the process before from the inside, working as an editor. But I suppose like how I felt about it has been different than I might have expected, I suppose. And just like working as an editor for lots of years didn't like could make me understand to a certain extent what it was like to be on the other side, but not entirely, I suppose. And I guess also for me, because I was trying to get published for a number of years. I had literated for a long time. I had lots of books out on submission before The Secrets of Harwood Hall got picked up. So for a long time I thought of getting a book deal as like the end goal. And in a way, it's a bit of a surprise to have a book out and realize it's not the end goal. It's the start of hopefully what will be a long career, and there's lots of stages and journeys and lots of stuff that is complicated. And actually, just like getting any new job, there are things which are difficult, and there are, things take a while. And so I think in some ways it's been, yeah, because I was working towards getting a book published for so long, actually having a book published has been a bit of a surprise, because I sort of didn't think so much about what happened next, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard from a lot of writers, they think that, or especially when they're first starting, that I've written my first draft. It's done. It's ready to be published. And then all through all the editing, and then even still, it can be a year before the book actually comes out.
2 years is quite normal. It was more than 2 years between me getting a book deal and the book coming out, and that's quite normal. It can be a very long time.
Well, let's kind of continue. We'll shift gears here a little bit and talk about Victober. Now, for most of the people on BookTube, they're probably familiar with Victober. It's a month where a lot of us will read Victorian literature over the month of October, and something about just the fall time of year tends to lend itself to, let's stay inside and get all cozy and read something, a familiar story or a favorite story or something, maybe a new author from the Victorian era. How did Victober get started? I believe you were one of the first, or you were the one that came up with the idea.
Yeah, so this was ages ago now. I think this year is the 8th Victober. So I think the 1st Victober was 7 years ago, with Victober sort of bookending 7 years. So it had been going for a long time. And I remember I thought it would be fun to have a Victorian readathon. And I don't like, and that was my only thought. And so I got in touch with, however long ago it was, 7 years ago, I got in touch with a few other booktubers who I knew also read and loved Victorian literature. One of whom was Kate Howe, who still hosts it with me. And the other three, Anne from Beyond the Pages, Alicia from Ex Libris, Yamini from the Skeptical Reader. Those three don't make booktube videos anymore and haven't for quite some time. But the five of us sort of started working out other possibilities. So we had the sort of basic premise of having a Victorian literature readathon, and we decided to make it a month. We came up with challenges. We thought it would be fun to do like a challenge each. And then Victober sort of began. And then it's just carried on. Like year after year, we've added new things. We now do a group read every year. We've changed around hosts a few times. So Lucy the Reader came and joined us for a while. And then last year and this year, we've had three new hosts joining me and Kate Howe, who are Marissa from Blakeney Bookish, Roz from Scally Dandling About the Books, and Petra Yu, all of whom also love Victorian literature. And it's just been really, really fun for the last, 7 years, for the last 8 Octobers to read lots of Victorian literature with people. And it really has grown a lot. Like, I'm surprised at how many people take part, how many people are on the Goodreads group or the Discord server that we now have, or how many people like post TBRs on BookTube. And usually every year, there's usually a couple of people who like join BookTube and post the Victober TBR. And I'm like very new to BookTube, which is always really, really nice as well. It's nice to see like new people getting involved. I feel like when I started BookTube, there weren't that many people talking about classics on BookTube. And now I feel like there's actually a massive classics community on BookTube, which is really, really nice. Especially I think with something like Victorian literature, where there are a lot of obscure things which you can get ebook versions of, but there's very little information about what they're about. So actually I get so many recommendations for Victorian literature through BookTube, because I've got to the point now where I've read like a lot of the Victorian books that are in print, or that you can like find lots of information about easily. And even if a book is in print and you can find a blurb, the blurb might have spoilers. Classic publishers do quite often have spoilers. So it's really great to have a community like BookTube where there's just a lot of recommendations going on. And actually in the Victober Discord server this year, there's been so many like great recommendations and like really specific recommendations passing between people who love Victorian literature and who've read random bits here and there, which is just really, really nice. Like, it's really nice to just have, a group of people who all enjoy reading books from this time period, and learning more about them.
And that's what I've come to appreciate is, I there's still a few of the big name authors that I have to finish some of their work, like George Eliot. I've got maybe two more of her books. I'm almost done with Elizabeth Gaskell, and I've read all of Dickens, and I've read a lot of. I mean, there's still probably more than half of Anthony Trollope I have left, and so I'm kind of in between there, but some of the big titles that people would recommend, that you see on the top 10 favorite lists, yeah, I've read them all. So I've read everything. There's nothing left. But what I love about just Victober and the BookTube community is that, it's so many people have been so well read that were able to dig in beyond, you know, just like the top 10, which nothing's wrong with the top 10. I mean, those are great books, but you know, I still am hungering for something new. And it's like, well, great. If you like Dickens, then you should like this guy no one's ever heard of, hardly heard of. It can help stir our interest.
Yeah, and I think as well with something like Victorian literature, we talk about it like it's a genre, but it's
Right.
not. It's a time where a lot of people are writing in lots of different genres. So you might read the most popular, most well-known 10 Victorian novels that there are and dislike them all, but you still might actually, there might be a bit of genre of Victorian literature that you absolutely love that you just haven't found. So one thing I really enjoy is like discovering new pockets of Victorian literature and discovering what Victorian literature I like. And a lot of which kind of hasn't been remembered. So it's always quite fun to kind of, yeah, discover new bits of Victorian literature that maybe aren't the most famous bits, but are really, really interesting in their own right. You know, there are a lot of books from the Victorian period that have not become classics, that are not well remembered, but are really fantastic and really interesting and well worth people's time.
Yeah, I always like it when I come across like a science fiction novel. You know, other than H.G. Wells, who actually wrote, you know, some non-science fiction work that's really interesting.
I like science fiction more than science fiction, actually, which is slightly rogue, but it's
Yeah,
great.
definitely. Oh, I can't. There's one I read by him, and I can't remember the title now. But it's about, it was like about an angel that came to Earth and fell in love with a human or something like that. I can't. Well, I'll have to look it up now, but. It was really interesting and kind of followed some of the tropes that, you know, we'll see movies like that in modern times where, you know, an angel comes and falls in love with a human and like, well, H.G. Wells, what are you doing writing about that? You know, it was really interesting. I think it was one of his first novels he put out. I can't remember now, but this is why I keep track of what I read. So, one thing I've been coming across a lot lately is a little bit of pushback about whether or not we should be reading or at least glorifying Victorian literature. Because, as you know, sometimes you'll come across things like, you know, racism or sexism, things like that, that are pretty awful to read. And I guess my question is Victorian literature still relevant to read? And how do we handle when we come across some of those, admittedly very difficult points of view?
I think for me, I love Victorian literature as a reader, but I also love Victorian literature like as a historian. Like I'm really, really interested in history. And when I read a Victorian book, I'm reading it as a novel that I enjoy, but I'm also reading it as a historical source. And especially because I write fiction set in the Victorian period. So like learning about Victorian history is really, really interesting to me. And it's something I've always been interested in. So for me, when I read a Victorian book, yes, it's a novel, but it's also a novel from the past, and I'm using that novel to learn about the past. So in that sense, like one, I always have the context in mind when I'm reading Victorian literature, but also if I read a book and it's unpleasant, like that tells you something about the past, which those were views at the time. And it's important to know that they were, because you know, that does still have an impact today. It's not like everything is completely fixed today in comparison to the past, even though there's been a lot of improvements. And I think some of the reasons why I really like reading Victorian literature and why I still feel like it's relevant. One is that the Victorian period was a time of like massive change and also a really massive technological change. And the way the Industrial Revolution and kind of machinery changed people's lives, I actually think has a lot of parallels to how kind of the internet and machines that kind of are changing our lives today. So I feel like the fact that the Victorians were living through a time of great change, and we also are, looking at the way the Victorians dealt with that, I find quite interesting. And the other reason why I like reading Victorian literature and why I feel like it's still relevant is that, like, a lot of the views of the Victorians are not great, but also there were a lot of people in the Victorian period who were writing against those views and who were pushing back on them. And actually, within the Victorian period, there's a lot of radical thoughts and a lot of social criticism and a lot of people who were really, really criticizing the society that they lived in. And you can read a lot of books which are very, very critical of the views of the time that are very, very critical of patriarchy, of imperialism. And these books are really, really interesting in their radical thought, but also it's really, I think it's quite heartening to read people from a time of very different views, like writing against those views and criticizing those views in a way that did make a difference sometimes to the kind of thought of the people around them. So that's something I think is kind of worth thinking about too. You know, I have been reading lately quite a lot from the New Woman movement, which is a kind of late Victorian proto-feminist movement, which is fascinating. And sometimes it's quite limited and has its flaws in terms of like how far certain people are willing to go, kind of. But it's really, really fascinating to see people in the late Victorian period really challenging ideas about gender and really challenging ideas about kind of gender roles and the position of women. And that's actually quite like, it's really interesting to look at people from the past who were criticizing their time very vocally. So I feel like there's lots of like relevance in Victorian literature to that, I suppose, as well. And also that there are just some very great books from the Victorian period as well. And I feel like I said, I'm really interested in history. I can't imagine that I don't know if someone who has no interest in history at all would get much out of reading Victorian literature. But I think if you're interested in history and you're interested in the past, then the Victorian period produced a lot of literature where people commented on the culture of their time a lot. And that is really, really interesting if you're interested in history, I suppose.
And then, of course, there's always that danger of, you know, removing history or ignoring history and then, you know, not realizing the mistakes people have made in the past and how their views had changed and became better, that, you know, it's an old saying, but you always run the risk of repeating history if you don't learn from it.
And actually what you were saying about like the glorification of Victorian literature as well, I think there's also this idea that like a classic is a classic and therefore it must be brilliant. And I actually feel like that happens more if people don't read these books. They're like, oh, it's this great masterpiece from the past. Whereas actually like these were books written for the reading public by flawed individuals who were writing sometimes at speed without much editing. Like actually it's I think before you read Dickens, you think Dickens is very, very literary and grand. And then you read Dickens and Dickens is completely ridiculous in a glorious way. And actually, if you read Victorian literature, then the Victorians stop becoming like, yeah, stop being glorified almost, because actually Victorian literature is quite messy and chaotic sometimes, I guess.
Well, I've read all of Dickens's novels and I've read a lot about, and I've also read a lot about him. I've got a bookshelf in my room that has like almost three or four shelves just of biographies and literary criticism and stuff. And my wife would make fun of me. She's like, another one? I said, well, it's cheaper than going to England and studying, studying about him. but you know, as you read more about him, you really come across things that, you know, personally, I'm like, ooh, this is hard to read. But I've appreciated that because it does, going back to context, it gives me better context for the writer, for his stories. And to see, you know, even guys like Dickens that I love reading about and learning about, he was a very flawed individual, you know, and I often wonder what society would make of him today if he were here. He'd probably be on some kind of medication or something, I think. So, but you learned to, you know, you learn to separate sometimes. You kind of have to, you know, the author from it, their work, and then also understanding the time period. And I don't want to make that sound like I'm, you know, excusing bad behavior, but some of it is just they didn't know better. You know, with Dickens, I think about, you know, his relationship with his wife and just how heartbreaking that was and how it fell apart. And, you know, if they had understood things more like postpartum depression and mental health and things, would that have turned out differently? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, also the sort of social restrictions of the time, like, and the way marriage was structured was so complicated and problematic. I mean, in a different world, Dickens and his wife would have got divorced and it could have been amicable, but because they didn't live in a society where that was acceptable, it became a lot more complicated, I suppose. So there's all of that kinds of things as well, is these people were living in, yeah, a time that was very restricted in many ways. So it's kind of, yeah, easy to see where people might have made mistakes.
But one thing I've learned just recently on my channel, we've been reading Fahrenheit 451 and been just doing some videos on that. That book talks about censorship and burning books, things like that. And there's a line in there, one of the characters towards the end was saying about how society got to a point where if something made them uncomfortable, they would just chuck it in the fire. And I'm like, I really think, the problem here is that we're becoming unwilling to sit with those uncomfortable feelings. Like this book makes me feel uncomfortable. Why is that? Let's think through it. And to just be dismissive of it because, oh, it makes me uncomfortable, then we're really missing an opportunity to grow and learn from the mistakes of the past. If anyone hasn't read that one yet, Bradbury is another favorite of mine. So Fahrenheit 451 is really worth the read, I think, but that's a whole other video.
Very good. I really like that.
We'll get to what people clicked on the video to watch here. Let's talk about Dickens. You're obviously a very big a fan of Dickens's novels. I love him as well. I've always joked that I can't get through a book tag without mentioning Dickens at least once. So, but how did you come across Charles Dickens in your reading journey?
So the first Dickens book I read was Our Mutual Friend, which I read, I think I was 14, so it was pretty early on in my classics journey. Because my mum really liked Our Mutual Friend, it's one of her favourite books, so she recommended that to me. Probably only a few months after I'd read Jane Eyre. I think I probably read like I read Jane Eyre, I read North and South, I read Pride and Prejudice, and maybe then I read Our Mutual Friend. So it really was one of the first classics I read. And I just loved Our Mutual Friend very, very much. And so I just started reading all the rest of Dickens, and I just really, really enjoyed Dickens. I think partly because Dickens is really, really plot driven, which meant I found his books really, really fun. And also, even if I didn't get all the references, even if I didn't get all the context, even if there were lots of sentences I didn't understand, like the plot was still really good. So I could really, really enjoy it. And since then, I've just really, really enjoyed reading Dickens. I wanted to read all of his novels, so I read all of his novels by the time I was 18, and then I started rereading them. I used to listen to a lot of Dickens on audiobook. I still listen to a lot of Dickens on audiobook because his books work so well read aloud. And I've studied quite a lot of Dickens as well. I did my dissertation at university on his books, which was really great fun. And I just really enjoy reading his works because they are so rich and weaving and fun, and slightly ridiculous, which is, really entertaining sometimes, and sometimes what you want in a book, I suppose. And his characters are so vivid. Yeah, I feel like no one writes quite like Dickens.
Yeah, I have come to really love Pickwick Papers just because of the ridiculousness of it, the humor. I don't know, I feel like that's maybe one that is getting more attention lately. But when I first read it, how old was I? I was in my 30s, I think. But I'm like, where has this book been my whole life? This is great. It turned out to be one of the best books I had read that year. It's just humorous, episodic. It really lends itself well to reading a couple chapters, putting it down, read something else. It's just brilliantly funny. And I've reread it a couple times. I think I already read it once this year, and I've actually been wanting to go back and read it again already. So it's really going up the charts of my favorite Dickens novel. But yeah, when I first the first Dickens novel I actually completed was A Christmas Carol, which I think I would recommend to somebody who wanted to try out Victorian literature or try out Dickens especially. It's a story you're familiar with. It can help with the language and all that. And in fact, when I first got a copy of it from the library, I remember I was kind of disappointed because I'm like, this thing's tiny. I thought it would be this big, massive novel like everything else he wrote. But then it kind of made sense about, why they make so many movies based on it. It's short, it's well known. It's just like an instant money maker. Now, do you have any are you able to rank like maybe your top three or four favorite Dickens novels or?
No, I think I think I can. So my favorite is Our Mutual Friend, definitely. That's my number one. My second favorite is Dombey and Son. Both of those are fantastic and quite underrated. Dombey and Son, especially, I feel like is very highly underrated. It's very, very good. My next two would probably be Little Dorrit and then Bleak House, which are also fantastic. But I will also just mention Barnaby Rudge because I reread Barnaby Rudge quite recently for the third time. It had been a long time since I last read it, and Barnaby Rudge really, really impressed me. And that is another very underrated one. I think it's probably Dickens's least known novel, but it is actually very good and very, very interesting. And actually, Barnaby Rudge is a book that I feel does feel quite relevant to today. It's set in the 1780s Gordon riots in London, which is a time. So one of the main themes of Barnaby Rudge is sort of prejudice and violence springing from prejudice. And it's a really interesting book and one that is not talked about very often. I think it probably wouldn't be my fifth favorite after Bleak House. Probably David Copperfield would beat it, but I feel like it's not mentioned very much. So, and I've reread it recently, so I thought I'd mention that as well.
I've been wanting to reread that. I read it. I've only read it that one once, Barnaby Rudge, and I really enjoyed it. And again, I thought, why aren't people talking about this more? But then, I haven't gotten back to it or I haven't reread it. So I kind of want to do that. And then you've been doing a Dickens read along on Discord where you're going through all of his novels over the course of 2 years. That's actually that was yeah, I read Pickwick Papers around the time you guys started doing that. And I was thinking about joining, but I just in my own personal reading taste, I have a hard time of reading more one author all in a row like that. For whatever reason, that's just the way I like to take a break between authors, and so I kind of jump ship early on. But I love that you're doing it, and I'll pop in on the Discord channel once in a while and read comments about some of my favorites that you're reading. But how's that going for you?
It's been great. So we've just finished Dombey and Son, so we're halfway through, I think, or more or less halfway through. And it's been really, really interesting reading Dickens in chronological order, reading his novels, yeah, in the order they were published in, because they do change a lot over time. And I feel like, personally, in general, I feel like his later novels are stronger. But also you can see the seeds of Dickens's greatness early on, but also some of his early books are a bit more flawed. But it's really, really interesting to read them in order and kind of see how Dickens grew and changed as an author. And for me as well, it's just been an excuse to reread all of Dickens because I love his books and I've been listening to all of them on audiobook, which has been really nice. Partly because then I feel like it feels more easy to fit it in around other reading. But also because Dickens just works so well in audiobook and they're such comfort reads for me that that's been really fun too. I'd also say as well, it's been interesting to kind of look at, yeah, how the themes change over time. My dissertation at university I did on how the presentation of gender changed over time in Dickens's books from his early books to his late books, because I think there is a really sizable shift in the way he looks at femininity and masculinity, the position of women and men, and the kind of gender roles from his early books to his late books. You know, I see lots of critics say that Dickens can't write women. And that is true in his early books, but it is definitely not true in his later books. And I think it's really, whenever I see someone say that, I think I know which Dickens books you've read, but I also know which ones you haven't read. And actually seeing Dickens's characterization is more shallow in his early books, and it becomes more developed, more complicated in his later books, both of his men and his women. And I think actually reading Dickens in order and kind of looking at how his books change, is just really, really fun. So I've been really, really enjoying doing that.
Yeah, that's something I learned from your channel about just his progress as a writer, especially of female characters. And then you get with I think it's in Our Mutual Friend in those opening chapters where you see and I forget her name, but she's not just Lizzie, is that right? Yeah, and she's not just her spirit is strong, but physically strong, as she's rowing the boat and doing different things. And I start noticing that now, having learned that, and like, yeah, this is not a woman character you'd find in like, Pickwick Papers or something, it's really changed. Some of my favorites of Dickens would, I think probably right now my top favorite is A Tale of Two Cities. That I think has some of the most beautifully written passages that Dickens has ever written. And I love the story of Sidney Carton and just his character growth and how the whole, I'm going to be careful of spoilers for a book over 200 years old, but or however old it is, but it's really powerful in its imagery and storytelling. And then if, I Pickwick Papers, every time I read it, I just enjoy it more. And I'm kind of basic too. I like David Copperfield, Great Expectations. Those two are probably going to be in my top five. I was going to ask, speaking of David Copperfield, I can't remember. Have you read Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver? Oh, you haven't? Okay.
I'm ready. Yeah, I've heard very good things, so I'm sort of aware of it. I'm about to reread David Copperfield for the Mega Dickens read along, like in the next 2 months. So I think maybe I'll read Demon Copperhead after I've reread David Copperfield.
I'll look forward to hearing your thoughts on it. But my problem was I kept getting distracted by Dickens in her story, because I think, oh, that's like in the book, and oh, that's a little different, that kind of thing. But yeah, it was interesting. Well, we better wrap things up here. So otherwise we'll just keep talking all day, I expect. But I know you've got, like you said, you're working on another book coming out. You want to go ahead and plug your social media, YouTube channel, all that? What do you have coming up here we can look forward to?
So my channel is Books and Things on YouTube, and Booktober is happening probably now by the time this goes up, throughout October, reading lots of Victorian literature. I have lots of videos about Victorian literature planned, which I'm looking forward to making lots of different topics, I'm sure. And I'm looking forward to, reading lots of Victorian books in October. My TBR for October is ridiculous, and we'll see what I actually get to. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And you can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram and Threads at KTJ Lumsden. But BookTube is my main platform, I guess.
What I love about her channel is, even though you have over 27,000 followers, you're still very active in the comments. You'll folks will find a very personal, active, and very positive community that has grown up around your channel and others like yours, that it's just been a blast to be a part of. So yeah, thank you for, putting out your content and keep doing it. It's great.
Well, I still have a lot of fun with it. I've been doing it. I think it's more than 8, maybe coming up to 9 years. I can't remember. It's been a long time, but I still really love making BookTube videos. So.
Good. All right. Well, again, her book is called The Secrets of Hartwood Hall. If you haven't heard of that or don't have a copy yet, run out to your local bookstore, pick it up. It looks like it'll be a good one. So, Katie, thank you so much for giving me some time today to talk. This was something I was looking forward to.
Great. Thanks very much.
All right. Well, you all take care. All right. Thank you for watching the Bookshelf Odyssey podcast, or for listening. And I would love for you to subscribe to my other podcast, Distracted by Dickens, especially this month. If you need some weekly distraction, I'll be here to read you a story and talk about my favorite author. Make sure you, if you're watching on YouTube, to like and subscribe to my channel so you don't miss any upcoming videos. As I've got another great interview planned for a couple weeks, so I'll have that out. Going to have Jessica Thompson back on the podcast. And she was a guest during my first season and really enjoyed her cozy mysteries. So I'm looking forward to talking to her about her brand new book she has out. With that, thank you again. And until next time, happy reading and take care.